This is Digital Story Podcast number 757, September 22nd, 2020. Today's theme is Backup is Not a Four-Letter Word. I'm Derek Story. Seems like every endeavor has a component that's not as much fun as the others. In the pursuit of photography, backing up files is a perfect example. But we can make it better. And on this week's show, I share 5 tips toward that goal. Plus, introduce you to a nifty hardware device that fits right into our discussion. All of that and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. If you've ever seen Dustin Hoffman in the movie The Graduate, you'll recognize what I'm about to say. He received sage advice for his career in just one word. Now remember, this was the 1960s. That one word, plastics. Well, I have just one word that should be at the foundation of your backing up and archiving strategy. Automate. Absolutely automate. So I'm going to be covering a few techniques today, but at the heart of the process for your backing up and archiving, and I will make a distinction between the two, you need to have as much automation as possible if indeed you're truly going to have a system that is up to date and reliable and all that good stuff. Now, in my case, I have iCloud and Dropbox. iCloud grabs files that are on my Mac or that go into Photos, and that's a lot of files. I have the big plan, the 2 terabyte plan. And all I have to do is pay the bill once a month and I'm good to go. I don't have to think about it any further than that. And Dropbox grabs files out of specific folders. Again, just takes care of it. All I have to do is pay the annual fee and I'm good to go there as well. Now, you may choose a different service, but I encourage you to bring as much automation as you can into your backup plan, because the more automation you have, the stronger your plan will be. Now, before I get to my 5 tips in addition to automation, I just want to share a note on the difference between backing up and archiving. They are not synonymous. Backing up is what you do during a project to ensure that you don't lose your work. If you're working on a wedding, okay, you're probably not going to get it all done in one night or in one sitting. So you back up so that when you come back to your wedding, you know, you can just pick up and go. But if something weird happens, you haven't lost your project. But when you're backing up, you're not backing it up in the final state. You're backing up a work in progress. Archiving happens when the project is over and in case you need to revisit it for whatever reason. Now, archives are the final version. In general, you don't save all the incremental backups that lead to the final version. You just save the final version itself. So archives are the final version. They don't need to be as quickly accessible as your backups. Your backups you want right there on a flash drive or whatever you happen to be using. They're the works in progress. Archives, the final version. Alrighty. Now, regardless of if it's an archive or a backup, you need to have a system. All right. You need to have a system for managing both. From this point forward, I'm going to use them more or less interchangeably, but I want you to understand that archives are longer term, backups are more works in progress. All right, here are 5 additional thoughts to consider when endeavoring to preserve your work. Okay, let's start out with the classic 3-2-1 rule. I'm sure you're familiar with this, and if you're not, you're going to be in just a few seconds. 3-2-1, well, what does that mean? That means 3 copies of your data, 1 primary copy and 2 backups, 2 types of storage media, local drive, you know, network, you know, whatever it happens to be, 2 types of media, and 1 copy off-site or in the cloud. In the cloud qualifies as off-site. 3-2-1, 3 copies of your data, 2 types of storage media, and 1 copy off-site or in the cloud. Now, I do both off-site and in the cloud, so I have a copy that goes to my home, all right? My primary copy is here at the studio. I have it backed up on a hard drive here, so I'm actually like at 4 or something like that. And then I have most of that data in the cloud as well. So I like both off-site and cloud, but one or the other. The thinking being that you can be as fastidious as possible backing up your data, but if you have it on a hard drive next to the computer and something happens at that particular location, whether it be theft or some sort of natural disaster or whatever, then you still lose everything. So offsite is important because chances are good that, something that 10 miles away or on a server 100 miles away, that if something happens to you locally, that your offsite copy will still be accessible. Okay, so 3-2-1. 3-2-1. 3 copies, 2 types of media, and 1 copy offsite. Number 2, don't erase your memory cards until 3-2-1 is in place. This is something that I have advocated for a long time. Or at least consider your memory cards one of those 3 copies. I know a lot of times photographers, especially if they want to be nice and tidy, they take their memory cards, they upload their files to Lightroom, and then they want to clean off their cards and put them back in their camera bag right away. I don't do that. And I don't recommend that you do that either. I copy my memory cards onto the computer. I'm using Capture One or Photos. And then I leave that information on the card. I do put it back in my camera bag, but not back into the camera. I put a fresh card back into the camera. And I try to leave as much content as I can on those memory cards until I absolutely have to erase them. And I don't even think about them as being, one of my 3-2-1s at all. I just think about, okay, it's nice having those in a camera bag that a lot of times ends up in a different place than my computer and my offsite storage already. So that memory card thing, I mean, memory cards are so affordable when you really think about it. And just leave those images on there until you absolutely have to take them off. Have a good supply of memory cards so you don't have to take them off quickly. And you never know. One day, one of those memory cards that still have all those images on there could save your bacon. I know it has for me. So don't erase memory cards at least until 3-2-1 is in place, and even longer if you wish. Number 3, once you develop your system, test it. Oh, this is such a mistake that people that don't do this. You have to test it. No system means anything until it's been tested and verified. And even then, we know things can go wrong because technology is involved, right? You do not want to wait until disaster strikes to discover that you have a flaw in your backup and archiving approach. You don't want to discover them. So develop your system, let it sit there for a week or two, and then pretend, hey, boom, my computer just went down. Pretend, right? Knock on wood and all that stuff. My computer just went down. Can I access those files in my backup system? How do I get to them? Do they show up? Can I find them? All that sort of stuff. And then take notes as you go through this exercise as to, wow, that was more of a hassle than I thought it would be, or that was difficult, or that just plain didn't work. And then use that information, refine your system, let it sit again for a week or so, you kind of forget about it, and then test it again. Test it until it passes the test 100%. Now, even after it passes the test 100%, twice a year, you still want to run a test. You still want to run a test to test your system just to make sure that everything is running the way that you think. Testing your system is probably one of the biggest mistakes I see people make in their backing up and archiving strategy. They don't do it. They wait until disaster strikes, and then they discover the flaws in their thinking. That is the wrong time to do that. Number 4, spin up your hard drives at least twice a year. Now, I know at some point we'll probably all be on solid-state drives, but the thing about it is for archiving, especially for archiving, those final versions of projects and shoots and so forth, spinning platter hard drives are just more affordable. They're just more affordable. You can get so much content on them. You can set up RAID systems more easily, yada, yada, yada. So they will be with us for a while still. Someday, like I said, all solid state, I don't think we're there yet. At least I'm not there yet. So I want to make sure that those hard drives that I depend on as part of my 3-2-1 are operable. And the way that I can test that and verify that is just like when I'm testing my system, I also want to test the hardware. Test the hardware at least a couple times a year. Make sure everything is running the way that you want. Just the fact that you fire up those hard drives and spin them will help them stay in better shape. And in the training that I did for LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com, which I'll talk more about in just a few minutes, I actually did a test of a whole bunch of hard drives that had just sat for 10 years. And then I registered the mortality rate and shared that. Okay. Test your hard drives at least twice a year. Spin them up. Make sure they're working. Make sure everything is good. Number 5, continue to explore new technologies that can make your job easier. Things are changing all the time in all areas of our craft. Backing up and archiving is one of them, okay? And don't just come up with a system and say, that's my system, and I'm going to ride off into the sunset with that. Because new things may happen that can save you time, that can make you more efficient, and that can be more reliable. So keep your eyes and ears open for new technologies. And then if you see something that you like in the world of new technology, test it before incorporating it into your system. In other words, you have to verify that indeed this is a good idea. And indeed what this marketing person is saying is actually true before you actually rely on it. Alrighty. But that being said, there's a lot of new stuff going on. If it can make your life better, you should explore it. Okay, so once I'm not a working photographer anymore, it's going to be interesting to see how much content I actually hang on to. Right now, I pretty much have to hang on to everything. But at some point, I won't have to. You know, I will no longer be doing jobs for other people, all that kind of stuff. And I think then it's going to be interesting to see how much stuff I actually retain. My inclination right now is really just to hang on to images that have personal meaning or maybe meaning to those that are close to me, who are close to me, and kind of let everything else go. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, but I'm already thinking about it because if something were to happen to me, either now or in the natural flow of time, I don't know if I just want to have hard drive after hard drive and archive after archive left behind for someone to have to sort out and think about and deal with and look at or not look at, or wondering, can I just destroy this or should I hang on to it, or am I doing him an injustice by doing either? Right? You know, all those things that people get stuck with, and I go, man, I don't want someone, you know, to have to deal with that. I mean, they're already having to deal with me not being here doing whatever I'm supposed to be doing. So I'm thinking, as time goes on, and as I'm able to, I would like to take all this stuff that I have, this data that I have, and really whittle it down to something that would be manageable for anyone that followed in my wake. So that is something that maybe I'll talk about more up the road, but I wanted to plant the seed now. How much do you need to hang on to, really, is my question. How much are you willing to leave behind after you're, you know, gone up to the happy shooting ground up in the sky there? You know, all those sort of things. So there are so many facets to this diamond. It's really fascinating. But the bottom line is, try to make archiving and backing up as enjoyable as possible. Automate as much as possible and keep your eyes and ears open for new stuff. And just stay at it. Don't give up. Don't get lazy. Keep at it. And then up the road, you can decide what you want to let go. But it should be your decision, not the universe's. New donation kit for carefree shipping of found film cameras. I haven't talked about this for a bit, but I want to talk about it today. As you run across stuff, speaking of stuff, right? Speaking of thinning out stuff, if you run across old film cameras, lenses, things like that, I have people who want that stuff and who are going to use it. It won't sit in the back of their closet. They are going to take it to their college film photography course. They are going to do artistic projects with it. They are going to explore their newfound love of film photography, but they're going to do something with it. Those cameras won't just sit. If you have one that's just stashed away and sitting, and you want to get it into the hands of someone who will use it, and you want to help this photography community all at the same time you can, just let me know. Use the contact form on thenimblephotographer.com. Thenimblephotographer.com. Go to contact form. There's even a box on the contact form for donating analog gear. Let me know what you have, and then I'll get back to you. If it's something that I think we can get into the hands of other people, I have a donation kit, and it's really cool. I send you a package. Inside of it, it has a box. It has a shipping label that's already prepaid, and all you have to do is put the box together. You just open it up and, you know, tape a few sides. Put your stuff inside of it, tape up the box, put the shipping label that I send you on it, put it on your front porch and tell USPS to come pick it up for you. They'll pick it up from you and they will deliver it to me. I'll take a look at it. I'll get it cleaned up. If it has some things that need repaired, I'll take care of that if I can. And then I'll get it in the film camera shop and get it into the hands of someone who's excited to have it and give that gear a second life. You can do that just by going to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form, let me know what you have, and then we will take it from there. Alrighty? Your donation helps get analog gear in the hands of aspiring fine art photographers and students, and those proceeds help support this podcast. The Kingston DT2000 Encrypted USB Flash Drive Review. Okay, so I publish this review on the digital story, so you can go there and get more information I'm going to talk about now, but I want to put this on your radar today. By the way, I have photos of the items on the digital story. What am I talking about? This is really cool. This is a flash drive at its heart, designed by Kingston, a company I just love. And on it, it has a keypad. Inside of it, it has encrypted technology that is top-notch. And what you can do is you can use this very robust flash drive. It's got gaskets. It's got a sleeve. It's, you know, weather sealed. You know, you can drop it. I mean, you know, this very robust device with beautiful aluminum components. You can use this as an encrypted drive with a keypad where you just enter your password and then it unlocks it. You put it in a computer, do your thing, take it out, lock it. And good luck someone else trying to break into it. I'm actually going to read you what Kingston says on their site because I think they put it really well. Kingston's Data Traveler 2000 is designed to be secure with an alphanumeric keypad that locks the drive with a word or number combination. For easy-to-use pin protection, the DT2000 features hardware-based full-disk AES 256-bit data encryption in XTS mode. Encryption is done on the drive, and no trace of the pin is left on the system. It's FIPS 140-2 Level 3 certified to meet frequency-requested corporate IT requirements. That's what I'm saying. You know, this is serious stuff. So the feature highlights are, you know, it has this really cool numeric keypad, and then the drive slides into an aluminum sleeve so that the keypad and everything is protected with a gasket where the sleeve fits onto the drive. FIPS 142 level 3, full disk AES 256 hardware-based encryption. It has an administrator pin, enables admin access to the drive and ability to issue a new user PIN if the user forgets the PIN, can be used on any device with USB 2.0 or 3.1 port, and I used it on a USB-C MacBook Pro. No problem at all. I just used it with an adapter and it worked perfectly. And by the way, I have a picture of the drive with the adapter that goes with the article on the digital story. The admin can pre-provision a drive with preloaded content and have it set as read-only for the user. So you can set that up as a read-only drive. It's compatible with Windows 10, Windows 8.1, Windows 8, Mac OS version 10.12 to 10.15, Linux kernel 4.4, Chrome OS, and Android 3. It works with all of those platforms. And the speed's not bad either. At USB 3.1, when it goes into that port, it is 135 megabytes per second read, 40 megabytes per second write. And at USB 2.0, because it is backwards compatible, 30 megabytes per second read, 20 megabytes per second write. This thing is beautiful. It is, as I wrote in the article, it feels more like an electronic device than it does a flash drive. I mean, calling it a flash drive, I think, really is doing it a disservice because, I mean, it has its own power. It has lights that light up, has a numeric keypad. You know, it's all built really robust, has gaskets and everything, has that cool metal sleeve that it slides into. I mean, you don't have to worry about physically damaging this drive, and you don't have to worry about anyone getting access to it. So I have tested both the Data Traveler 2064 gigabyte model and the 128 gigabyte model. The 128 gigabyte model is brand new, by the way. For the 64 gigabyte model, it's $153. I have a link to it in the show notes. And for the 128 gigabyte model, it's brand new, but you can get it through this link that I have in the show notes for $234. And I would say, in closing, that these are confidence-inspiring devices. They are really a great way to hang on to your data, preserve your data. And if somehow you lose them, you will be sad because you've lost $153 or whatever, but you will know that no one else will be able to access the data that's on that drive. So there's some solace there. I love these things. Take a look at the article on the Digital Story and see what you think. Okay, we've been talking about data protection and everything. I want to mention that on LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com, I have a title that's relatively new, only a couple months old, Organizing and Archiving Digital Photos. It's on LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com, and it's really a great way to begin the process of protecting your digital media for years to come. A lot of things I talked about today are in the training, and then there's a lot more beyond that. I really get into, you know, working with specific applications. I get into a variety of different techniques. I get into setting up a Finder-based system. You know, I mean, just all sorts of fun stuff. It was the first thing that I worked on after shelter-in-place set in during the pandemic. So it was like, all right, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to do this title right now. And I just went for it. I had been preparing for it for a couple months and I was just ready to go and I just did it. So that was my number one pandemic project. And I thought it turned out really well. You can see for yourself by clicking on the links in the show notes to either take a look at some of the sample movies on LinkedIn Learning or on lynda.com. You can subscribe if you want, or you can just buy the title. They'll let you buy it outright as well. If you're interested in stuff, if you're interested in really kind of thinking about how to set up your plan, take a look at this and see what you think. So last week I let you know that I'm working on and have launched the sign-up page for our online version of the Eastern Sierra Workshop. This has all sorts of innovations in it that I'm not seeing at other places, including you working on assignments before the workshop, you being able to contribute content for the workshop, getting feedback, if you wish, it's optional, from me and from your peers. We're just going to do all sorts of stuff. I think this is going to be a terrific event. We start on the assignments in third week of October. The workshop itself is going to be the first Friday and Saturday in November, November 6th and 7th. That's where we all get together online and we will have done our pre-work and we get to reap the benefits. There'll be instruction, there'll be sharing, there'll be Q&A. I have some little videos that I've created where I went out on location and shot them. I have all sorts of great examples. I mean, it's really going to be fun. But the thing that I like about it is that we're going to be able to enjoy each other's work and learn from each other as well as from me. November 6th and November 7th, when the actual event happens, we start working on it in the third week in October. If you're interested in joining us, all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops, and you'll see it right there. It's $150 to sign up for it. That's all it costs. You don't have to travel, no hotel rooms, nothing. You get everything, $150. If you're a Patreon member, it's $125. Just go to your Inner Circle site, your Patreon site, and you'll see the discount code there that you can apply. We already are half full on this just after last week's announcement, and I anticipate that we will fill up. There are a limited number of seats because even though technology allows us to have, you know, whatever, hundreds of people, the way that I want to do workshops does not allow us to have that big a group. In order to get the personalized service that you've come to expect from our workshops, we're limiting the number of seats. If you want to get in on this, go over to thenimblephotographer.com and sign up today. A little bit more virtual camera club news right here. Let's just take care of a few things. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for supporting the show, supporting this podcast. If you want to join this great group of artists who are committed to this community, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on every page of the digital story, and you can go over to our site, take a look at what's going on, and hopefully join us. We would love it. There are many perks to being an Inner Circle member. The latest one right now is that $25 discount for our online Eastern Sierra workshop. Thank you, Inner Circle members. I so appreciate your support. Also, we have tiles for B&H and Amazon on all the pages of Digital Story in the second column there. And the links that I put in the show notes and in the articles are also affiliate links. If you're going to purchase something, especially something that we've talked about, if you go to the Digital Story first, I would appreciate it. Use one of those links or click on one of those tiles and then purchase whatever you're going to purchase. That helps support this podcast. Thank you very much for taking that extra step. And finally, be sure to visit our friends at Red River Paper for all your inkjet supply needs. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can go there and you can check out all the different types of paper they have, tutorials on how to use it, projects that you may be interested in, reviews of inkjet printers, accessories, you know, things like envelopes and glassine sleeves. You can even get ink there. And they have a rocking page on Facebook as well, facebook.com/redriverpaper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast, our longest running sponsor. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. Thank you for joining me. Be sure to revisit your backup and archiving plan and then come back and join me next week for a new show. Until then, have a terrific week. Bye-bye now.